Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back once again with our guest, Alicia from the Lorehounds, joining us from very far away for, you know, another episode. And we're here to, you know, just dive right back on
it's,
in.
It's a hell of a trip.
Thank you for having
every
me.
Single yeah. day.
Yeah, it's really impressive that you're flying.
I literally fly to their
day.
House.
Yeah, every day.
It's terrible for the environment, but
yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah. Today we are talking about minute 63 through 64 of Dune Part 2. And we left off yesterday with the group of Fremen heading south on top of Shai Hulud's back. We got a brief glimpse of Jessica inside the palanquin, and a Fremen got up to, you know, turn towards the palanquin, and we're getting into that conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica's pointing out the obvious. These storms look bad.
She just wants you to remember she's a noob.
Yeah. No, she's quite unfamiliar with the desert, even though she is now a Fremen reverend mother.
She's on the fast track.
Yeah.
To it,
yeah.
Cultural immersion program.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We talked earlier about a study abroad, and then Paul, you know, found his way in. Jessica just transferred credits from another school, and it's enough, apparently.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fremen man that's standing outside the palanquin in Chakobsa says, "They're the guardians of the south. It's a hard crossing, but Shai Hulud is strong." And then he takes a very thin piece of fabric and closes it over the opening of the palanquin. Mm-hmm. And let's just hope that that fabric holds up through the Coriolis storms, which, as we talked about in our coverage of part one, are not calm storms.
No.
I was just going to say, should Jessica feel insulted because the only... Probably they only wrap her up like that as opposed to everyone else because she's a reverend mother. And the last one they did it, she was a very old woman. And now they're like, oh, but you were a very fragile white woman.
I would probably feel like 30% insulted, but the rest be like, okay, I'm cool. I'm glad I'm in this little pod. That's fine.
Yeah, she at least has like the outer shell of the pod to prevent, you know, her from getting hit by stuff. Because remember, very... recently, she had gone through another one of these storms in an ornithopter, and she had remained conscious the whole time. Her son hadn't.
Yeah.
So she saw just how bad these storms can be. So I'm sure this is maybe a little better for her, if anything, just because she's already on the ground. So if something happens, she doesn't then have to fall several thousand meters to the ground through a storm. So bright sides to everything.
I love the personification of them as guardians of the South because indeed, this is why the Harkonnens never bother looking down there. Like everyone just accepts, oh, nobody could live down there because of these storms, which obviously once they get to the other side, it's like a belt of storms. Don't they have satellites?
No. It's spelled out in the books eventually. I don't think it's been spelled out yet, but the Fremen pay the guild in spice to not have satellites on the southern part because that is truly where their numbers are. Like there's a lot of Fremen in the north, yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more in
millions
the south.
And to the guild just says, and yeah, this is something I hope they bring up in the third movie, the guild of it all and everything and the role they play in all these machinations. But yeah, indeed. They're just like lying to the Harkonnens. They're just like, nah, nobody down there. Don't worry about it.
Well, I mean, they can get past it saying, we don't see anything down there. Because that's technically true.
Yeah.
You know, if they were put against the truthsayer, they would be telling the truth. We don't see anything because they don't have satellites.
Yeah. You bring up a good point of how they're going to handle it in part three, because that's one of the big revelations at the end of the book, is that Paul discovers, you know, the nature of the guild and everything, and we have none of that here. In fact, the revelation is spoiled for us in the third minute of the movie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
maybe it's like the sixth or the seventh, where the where Paul's film book talks about how spice is necessary for the guild to travel.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that whole dynamic is also played out in part three or Messiah or whatever they're calling it.
My money's on it's not even going to be a thing. They're not even going to bring it up. They're going to focus on the relationship with the Bene Gesserit and what Paul's doing around. The guild will be a minor part of the third one, which stinks.
Yeah. If it's going to become an intergalactic jihad, then the guild has to be involved in some way to travel.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think they will be. It's just like, I think they're going to be a kind of a minor player versus like the major one that they are in the book.
Right.
We may get Edric. Maybe.
No. There's no way they don't include Edric.
We'll see.
If they don't include Edric, I'm fucking losing my shit.
They didn't include Thufir in this movie.
Yeah, and okay, I have thoughts about that in the next minute.
Fuck you.
In the next minute, okay. I have more thoughts about the fact that Hawat's not included.
Yeah, okay, all right, we'll get there.
Fuck you, Zach.
But
don't
here,
do this to me.
Okay.
Don't put that out there.
My thought here, though, is that it's ironic. This is a moment, you know, we're referring to Jessica projecting more strength in the last minute. But here we see she's alone. She's in a space where she can't be seen. And you see her looking a bit fearful, which is ironic because she has the litany against fear written across her face. But then, yeah, that moment where we see in the womb and Aaliyah puts her little hand on the womb to calm her mother. And then you're like, that's like, I don't think she's controlling her, but I think she is the one in charge in a way.
I don't think she's necessarily putting her hand on the womb to confront or to comfort her mother, because it's after there's a little bit of a shake from Shai Hulud hitting something. It's almost like she's kind of like holding herself like a oh shit kind of moment, because she doesn't have the oh shit.
Interpret it my way.
Yeah. I do like the Aaliyah's comforting her mother stance on it, though. I don't have an opinion.
I didn't read it that way, but I can see that being a possible little, because we've seen how much of the relationship between Jessica and Aaliyah has been growing. So,
and if you want to think about it, like, the shot, like, okay, the worm jostles and Jessica gets tossed around, then cut to the baby inside going, whoa, that would be almost like a laugh line, you know? And that feels out of place with the seriousness that is going on here.
Yeah.
But I think the way I interpreted it is the fact that Aaliyah is an abomination. And sorry, yeah, like I said in the previous episodes, I'm going to pronounce it both ways as comes out of my mouth. We don't get to see that because they don't want to do the Renesmee thing with the talking baby, which fair, I understand. So how do you communicate that while they're still in the womb, where we're getting this sense like of that she's making Jessica more calm in general? You know, we were complaining about Jessica, Stressica, as you guys put it in the first movie. And here she's more centered and projecting more confidence. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that she's pregnant, and now that she's pregnant with a prescient child. And then, so I saw that moment, she reaches out and like kind of calms her mother, who was just shown looking fearful about the storm. It's like, who's parenting whom here?
Yeah, no, I like that read. I like it.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you bring it up, it definitely makes a little bit more sense. Because to me, I just read it as there's a bump and this baby's like looking for an oh shit handle, and she doesn't have anything to hold on to. So see, and this is why I like having guests on the podcast, because y'all bring stuff to us that we would have just made a dumb joke about.
So I want to talk about these storms for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about weather recently, as I'm learning. This, and I don't have answers to this, but I want to bring this up. So the weather systems on Arrakis are such that they have a band of storms that seems to be constant. If they've always been a barrier from people going from north to south, these seems like this would be like a constant band of storms around the equator. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they attribute them to the Coriolis effect. So there's something that is something about Arrakis is inherently a 180 to how things work on Earth, because the Coriolis effect on Earth does the exact opposite effect here. We have no storms at the equator. Everything either moves north and south, like hurricanes in the oceans, they do not cross the equator.
Yep.
So I was, but it got me thinking. I was like, that's a really interesting little like bit of physics that Frank Herbert decided to introduce to this story. And so I was looking around yesterday, and I found this this website. I can't even remember when it was published, but there was a group of people much, much smarter than me. I think like PhD level in
meteorology
and geography and stuff like that. But they wrote an article and built a website that where you can go see the weather patterns, and they did like extensive modeling on the weather patterns of Arrakis.
Yeah.
And it's like a 3D model. You can see the storms and how it like how the wind flows over the different topography of the planets, and it's really, really, really cool. And I'll put that those links in the show notes for today's episode. But it's a fascinating article too. John, did you get a chance to read through it?
Yeah. Well, in my lay understanding of how weather works, attempted to read through it, and the way that they talked about like using the maps that Frank had given us of mm-hmm. Arrakis,
yeah,
and trying to map it as close to our real world like weather prediction modeling systems and everything, mm-hmm. found that yes, Arrakis is a brutal planet to live on. It is habitable, but highly inhospitable.
Yeah, I like that line from the article.
Yeah, so like it is pretty good on Frank to, you know, really lean into everything that he knew about ecology and different, you know, geographic systems to come up with a world that could realistically exist. Mm-hmm. According to scientific models and everything that we have now. Yeah. Now, you said that you didn't know when this was published. It was published October 26, 2021 on theconversation.com.
Okay.
And like you said, I'll make sure that that's in the show notes and the description for everything as well, because it is a really cool, if anything, a really cool 3D render of an interactable Arrakis that you can go to and you can, you know, Google Earth it basically in terms of watching how the weather patterns and everything work, especially the stuff around the poles. And you know, I'm going to plug something that Dune Navigator Martin did recently, which was a study on, you know, whether or not there was water and ice in the polar regions as well, because this article seems to really, you know, indicate that the polar regions during their respective winters would actually seemingly get pretty fucking cold.
Yeah, and that was like the biggest departure that I saw from it. They said that this, you know, according to their models, of course, so take it for what you will, but they said that it would not always be hot, arid, and dry.
Yeah.
Hot, arid, and dry, like 100% of the time. There would be massive swings in like where the freezing temperatures would be. So like Arrakeen is depicted as kind of in the northern, like more towards the pole than it is the equator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like Arrakeen would experience really, really big temperature fluctuations from summer to winter. So the stillsuits would not only have to, you know, keep heat or keep you alive in the heat, but they'd also have to keep you alive in the cold. So it's a very big difference, and we don't get any of that in the books. We don't get any of the cold side of this.
Now, granted, this is also with, you know, Earth models and everything. Sure, so, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, take it with as much of a grain of salt as you want to. But clearly this was enough for this group of of scientists to be interested in like diving into, okay, could this be practically modeled? And mm-hmm. it was. So it's a really cool article.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you call hard sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly.
we love that though.
Alicia, you'll mm-hmm. be interested in this one too, because they did the same thing for the Wheel of Time world.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
cool. They did. So we'll make sure you get the link for it. Yeah.
SaveWatt.com. Just saying, if you haven't signed the petition, we're trying to get to, well, hopefully it'll be well over 100K by the time this comes out.
Okay. Bring the show back. Got to bring mm-hmm. it back.
Yeah, Sony's free to shop it around. So.
Okay, good, good. Well, I'm hopeful. Okay, so I just want to talk. I wanted to nerd out on the weather for a little bit.
Yeah, I love the shots of that storm and the worm entering the storm. Like we get it from the side, we get it from above. Just from a shot composition perspective, the different. It's monochrome, of course, but the different mm-hmm. textures.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous to look at, and it just shows like, yeah, Jessica, you're right. That's freaking terrifying. That wall of storm.
Now, and this worm looks like it's riding pretty low in the sand. Did y'all pick up on that at all?
It definitely seemed like the front of it was still buried, but then like the top of the body was just kind of peeking out of the sand. Okay. So once again, going back to, I think what Alicia was saying last episode, show us how they're doing it. Show us how they're getting it. The palanquin and that, all of these people on and off the worm, damn it.
For that, like the fact that it's riding low makes sense to me, because the worm would obviously love to be under the sand, but they're holding open, you know, like the chunks of the worm's armor, so it can't go mm-hmm. under. So it's going to, but it's going into a storm, so it's going to go as low as possible without submerging the part that's exposed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Old Frank thought of everything, didn't he?
The things that Frank didn't think of, it's clearly this, someone else, you know, film crew definitely thought of a lot. So, but the loud chaos of the storms comes to a very sudden stop. We've left explosions and we're back to whispers.
Yes.
It is a dark, quiet, you know,
peaceful
evening. Very peaceful.
Very peaceful evening.
There's a little bird mm-hmm. sound, you know, going
on. Yeah, the air is calm. The mountains, a really pretty mountainscape in the background.
Yeah, we're looking at some Harkonnen architecture and everything. Yeah, and nice. Then surprise, explosions.
Boom!
we're back to explosions right from the whispers again, baby.
I think we're all in agreement. Those bird sounds we heard were the Fremen calling to each other.
So...
to detonate, right?
So mm-hmm. I found an inconsistency between streaming platforms.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you and I have been watching this on the Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
right? But last night I was laying in bed, couldn't fall asleep, so I was like, fuck it, I'll put on Dune.
As you do.
As I do. And I was streaming it on... my purchase that I made on Apple TV.
Okay.
I have a copy there as well because I like Dune. Don't at me. Our original, it was for our original
episodes
for part one.
I'm with you. Yeah,
before we bought the Blu-ray. The subtitles on the Blu-ray say bird sounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The subtitles on Apple TV say, Stilgar makes bird sounds.
Really? Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting distinction. And, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's a little important for, you know, some context. But also, it would make sense and stand to reason that Stilgar would be the one making those noises, because we've heard him do it several times before already
mm-hmm.
in the movie. It was at the start. So... we know Stilgar was there for the explosion of the Spice Depot.
I'm just wondering, why would there even be a discrepancy in subtitles?
I don't know.
It's weird.
I'm wondering the big boom that they make happen. And of course, they say we lost 80% of our last crop. Is this... what's the goal of the Fremen with this? Are they trying to chase the Harkonnens off of Arrakis? Do they think this... that might work.
So in the cafeteria scene in part two, Paul explicitly lays out his plan to disrupt spice production in order to get to the Emperor.
So it's just so it's to like draw the Emperor in.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, that seems to be his plan, because throughout the minutes before this, I want to say it was our episodes from 2 weeks ago, we saw Paul and the Fremen attacking more of the harvesters with, you know, missiles and laser guns and right. everything. And we saw more of the, you know, destruction on the ground. So it stands to reason that if Paul and the Fedaiken can do enough to not let the Harkonnens meet their quotas, then Dad's going to have to, you know, come home and and ask for some answers.
Mm.
Right. And then at that point, that's where Paul would want to be able to confront the Emperor about his father's death.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. I just thought Paul's a little rascal. He's a troublemaker. That's
what he's likes little, doing. You little rascal.
A little desert mouse.
Yeah. So I will say that going frame by frame through this with the Blu-ray, no laser gun or projectile that I could see. This clearly came from the inside. They broke in to plant bombs, I guess.
I will say, too, watching from the Blu-ray, if you have a good HDR display, oh,
good explosion.
Beautiful. All right. Beautiful.
I was watching on my phone, so.
No. I'm just kidding. God damn it.
That's how I watch every minute, just on my phone, like as I'm doing other things, and I just dictate my notes. Yeah.
Oh. Gross.
Gross.
I know you're kidding, but goddamn, that sounds awful. That's like some last resort Dune Minute podcast note taking right there.
I noticed, so this time I went to watch it, and it's normally on HBO Max, right? But it was on Netflix this time, and I noticed it was I guess I don't have the maximum Netflix because it got real expensive. So I noticed a degradation in quality versus the last time I watched it. It's a shame.
Oh, no.
It was a mere HD. They could just be here. They? It could just be a thing here where they like
could be
rent it out for a while to Netflix.
Fair enough.
Thing.
It said recently added. So, yeah. But I went to HBO and I was like, what the? Yeah.
So the whole place goes up. That's the point of the story. Whole place goes up. And about 2 seconds later, alarms start to blare.
Yep.
And we start to see a bunch of goons again. We get some more goons around.
It's been a while since we've had some gooning.
We've not had a lot of gooning recently. And they're scrambling. These goons are scrambling. They're trying to get to their ornithopters as quickly as they possibly can. And we see Raban. Walking through, carrying a whip. So we get a close up on his whip at the hip first. His whip hip.
Yep.
And he's screaming. He's screaming, "How much? How much?" And then there's some like, I guess like actuary goon behind him.
Attendant.
Yeah, he's a
whatever.
An accountant.
Minion.
Counter. Yeah, spice counter. Space bean counter.
Yeah.
Spice minion.
Yeah, exactly. titled commander in the subtitles. So he does have some rank. So give some respect to his
he's
name.
He's still a nerd.
Yeah. And he starts to say, "We lost 80% of our last crop." And then he waits for a second. He goes, "My lord, what?
You have your notes wrong. It is, my lord Rabban, end of minute."
Yeah.
The 80% of our last crop is the start of the next minute.
Oh, shit.
No,
you're right.
I have it. The minute that was shared with me, it said 80% of our last crop in this
one. And then my Lord Rabban, because then
he goes, and then it starts.
Trim this out.
Mm-hmm. Nope. I have my notes wrong. Fuck.
Yes.
Yeah. We lost 80% of our last crop. My Lord Rabban. Mm-hmm. And then our minute stops.
Okay, I'm leaving that in. Since you were wrong, I'm leaving it in.
Fuck you. I'm editing this episode.
So the commander says, "We lost 80% of our last crop, dot, dot, dot. than my Lord Rabban, and that is exactly where our minute cuts off.
Yeah.
So we get Rabban back, Rabban.
Rabban.
We get Rabban back, and I'm good to see him. We love some Rabban minutes.
Yeah.
Mm.
They're few and far between, but
I like
him as an antagonist.
I'm going to talk about, I might say something that you consider a hot take in the next minute then about him.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess you'll have to come back for tomorrow's episode as we wrap this week up for Alicia's hot take.
Again, no book notes here. Anything else from Art and Soul or anything else?
Nothing from the encyclopedia, nothing from Art and Soul. We will be back tomorrow with those notes.
Okay.
In our last episode of the Dune Minute for this week.
All right. Anything else on your side, Alicia?
Just to switch it up, I already said Dune, Woolshift, Dust, Murderbot, the Lorehounds on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. We're talking about the High Republic. Space vibes.
Nice. That's it.
That's good stuff. Yeah. That's the good stuff. All right. Well, the Dune Minute can be found online in two different places. You can find us on Blue Sky, where we're most active. It's mostly just me shitposting with the rest of everyone else. At DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us that way. All of the Lorehounds contact is also available in the episode description, so feel free to go check out their many, 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 many shows. And we'll be back tomorrow with our last episode of the week.
All right. See you then.
See ya.
Bye.